Welcome to Conscious Communication, the podcast that can help you improve your company's culture and better your team's communication, helping you build more significant relationships. Now here's your host, Philip Bogolub.
I have the privilege and honor of talking with Professor Pete Alexander. He gave me permission to call him Professor Pete. He is the president of the greatest interior landscaping company in San Francisco Bay Area. It's not just an interior design, it's the greatest.
That's
so
I wanted
to accentuate that. He's also an adjunct professor at Antioch University, a professional speaker, a best-selling author, and a yoga teacher. I will go into all this stuff. Welcome to the show. Thank you for coming.
Philip, thank you so much for having me on your show and for your listeners' time as well.
Absolutely. Thank you. So I will start with the first one, professional speaker and best-selling author, but I love the part, well, it's not a good thing, but you unfortunately say you learned the hard way. Trading your health for your career is a very bad trade. Health for wealth, wealth for health. You said that before. But before we even go into that, I want to find out how you got to where you are now with all these different things you've done in your life. Where was that serendipity, that aha moment, that coincidence that happened in your life that turned you in the direction to where you are now in your life?
Sure. Well, I'd like to say it started with my dysfunctional family upbringing that I had. It was one of these crazy things that is worth a whole podcast episode on it. So, but what that did was that didn't teach me how to deal with my stress. I just tried to ignore it as much as I possibly could. And it wasn't until I became an adult where it started really having a negative effect on my mind and body. And what we have as our bodies will tell us when we are being stressed. You know, it gives us the early warning signs. And I was getting those for years and years. And what did I do? I kept on ignoring them. And then came 2008, and I was experiencing a perfect storm of stressful activities that culminated in my diagnosis with stress-induced diabetes. And classically, what did I do? I didn't listen to my body about what stress was doing to it. So I continued to burn the candle for another 10 years, like a lot of us would do, until I ended up in the emergency room in 2018 with a severe case of diabetic ketoacidosis. And for your listeners who may not know what that is, basically my body was eating itself alive because of my stress.
Wow.
And the crazy thing is, I was transferred from emergency into ICU, the only time I've ever been in ICU, and I had to spend several days there. And the epiphany moment came on my second day. I was working for a medical device company, and I had a micromanager boss. And my boss knew that I was in the emergency room and knew that I had been transferred into ICU. And on my second day in ICU, at a roughly 6 a.m., I get a text from my boss, and she says, "You have a webinar you need to run at 8 o'clock. What are you going to do about it?" And so instead of me saying, "I'm in the ICU, I don't have my work laptop with me, I can't do anything," what did I do? I grabbed my phone and I started pushing the envelope as much as I could to try and reschedule that webinar. Well, when I was admitted to the ICU, my blood sugars were so high that the medical grade glucometers could not read it. So the lab in the hospital had to manually estimate that I was 8 to 10 times higher than normal.
Oh,
and the
man.
Doctors had told me I was 1 hour from being comatose because they were so high. Well, by the second day, my numbers had come back down into what I would call more reasonable numbers. They were still high, but they were more reasonable. At least the devices could read
my
blood.
Right.
Exactly. Well, as soon as I got this text and I was sitting here, the nurses were checking my blood every hour. And the nurse at that point, she comes over and she checks my blood as I'm sitting there with the phone. And the numbers, instead of coming slowly down, it did a 90-degree angle and skyrocketed back up. And she says to me, pretty much pretty close to a complete stranger. She says to me, "You realize that's what put you in this hospital bed in the first place." And that was the epiphany moment I had, because I thought to myself, what am I doing? As you said earlier, I'm trading my health for my career, and that's a really bad trade. So the rest of that day, I just really started contemplating that, and I got out of the hospital a couple of days after that. And the day after that, I just resigned, and I just said, I got to focus for the first time in my life, truly, the first time in my life, I have to focus on my health, because nothing else matters right now. Because if you think about it, when we're sick and we don't have any energy to do anything other than lie in bed, we're no good to our businesses, we're no good to our careers, we're no good to the people who are important to us. It's so health is paramount. And so I started focusing on different stress relief tools and techniques. And what I found was that not only did my stress go down, my glucose numbers as a diabetic went down, my weight went down, and my energy went way up. And the craziest thing of all is, if you were to see pictures of me back in 2008, before I got stress-induced diabetes, and you see pictures of me now, 14 years, almost 15 years later, the crazy thing is, other than a little bit more gray hair on my head.
Hey, you got hair. No complaints.
Well, yes, exactly. But other than the gray hair, I look younger today than I looked 14, 15 years ago. And that's what stress does to us. It's crazy.
It just eats away at your body. And you're saying, diabetic ketoacidosis. Acidosis. Mm-hmm. And it just, you know, our minds create the stress. And over, as you said, over a period of time, where else is it going to go? It's not going into the light. It's not going into your car. It's not going to your family. It's going through you. And somebody told me once, they said, well, the stress, it's because I'm old and the stress did it to me. I'm like, no, it's the amount of time you've been doing it. I mean, if you started doing this when you were 80 and you died at 95, big deal. You're 95. You know, I'm generalizing, of course.
Yep.
But it's like, it's the amount of time. And if you keep doing it over and over and over, and I call this a God wink. I says, like, you were told, like, either you get it together or you're going to die.
That's absolutely right. Because what happens is our bodies keep pushing up more and more warning signals. And the crazy thing is, for me, nobody in my family has diabetes. And I, you know, when often what happens with diabetics, they think, okay, it's somebody who can't control their weight, for example. And I was exercising regularly, but what ended up happening is my pancreas was the weakest link in my body's chain. And to your point about, you know, if you're 80 and you're stressing yourself out and you live to 95, the reality is our bodies are the same bodies that we had back in the Stone Age. And, you know, so what did we deal with stress back then, at least according to what we understand? Maybe it was short term, trying to outrun a T-Rex,
a tiger,
something like that. Nowadays, most of our stress is mental, and we're constantly putting that stress into our bodies in the form of cortisol, adrenaline, and we keep dumping it into our bodies unnecessarily. And our bodies just keep on getting beat up by that. And when we don't do anything about taking care of that negative stress, because, you know, we don't have to get rid of all of our stress, because there's actually good stress. We want to just get rid of the negative stress. And if we can get rid of the negative stress, all the other stress is a piece of cake. It really is for us.
Well, I think it's the healthcare for the mind. We don't have anything for healthcare. I'm not talking about psychologists and stuff. Those are great things to have, and therapists. But for psychology or our healthcare for the mind, it's ourselves. You were just saying it. They told you, hey, slow down or you're going to die. Whatever. You know,
yes.
You've got to come to that realization. I had a friend of mine that got very sick and something happened to him. And he agrees. I call it God week, but it was like, slow down. You don't slow down, you're going to die.
Yes.
And because it just eats at you. So focusing on healthcare for the mind is basically what this whole show, Conscious Communication, is about. How you talk to yourself, how you interpret things to yourself. Because I could tell you till blue in the face, you keep doing X, it's going to destroy you. But I can't change you. You've got to change yourself from within, which leads to a really good question about going back to the first one.
Sure.
So the health issues you already told me about. What did you, when you were going through this, what did you replace those with? What philosophy or what belief system kind of clicked that in for you? And then I have another added question to that, but where did that start from and how long did it take till you got your head on straight, for lack of a better word?
Well, after that nurse said, you realize this is what's doing it to you. You know, I had had several friends, the doctors, they had told me, you got to calm down your stress. My friends, my family members. And what I did, the classic, yeah.
Right.
And it was the fact that it was pretty much a complete stranger who didn't have any vested interest in me other than, okay, I'm one of her patients for her shift.
Right.
You know, so I thought, okay, I better look at this. And then one of the things that dawned on me is that I wanted to be around for my future grandchildren.
Bang.
And, you know, it's like, wow, I've got several friends who've passed away well before that. And they, you know, the sad thing is that there was so much more that could have appreciated about life. And the reality is, you know, and I'm sure you've heard this thing too, when you're on your deathbed, you're not going to be thinking back about, if only I would have worked another 5 minutes or half an hour a day or one extra day a week or whatever it is. That doesn't matter. What is it that's going to matter? And I remember hearing, and I wrote about this as one of the ideas in my book, is to think about your funeral. And you think about what people are going to say about you. And then think about the people who are in the first two rows of your funeral. What would you want them to say?
Wow.
And would you want them to say, he worked a lot? Or, oh, you know, he was a hard worker, you know, and when once in a while, when we got to spend a little time with him, he was a nice guy or something like that. Is that what you want? Or do you want to be remembered a different way? And that's part of the reflection of thinking about it in your mindset, because the reality is, our perception of the world is based on whatever our experiences are, and our conscious mind is out there trying to control all of that.
Yeah.
So, and you know, our inner critic comes from our conscious mind. And, you know, a lot of people say, oh, our inner critic is terrible. Well, yeah, I mean, it can be. The reality though is it's not intending to be a bad guy. It's trying to protect us. So our inner critic says, oh, don't do that, you might fail. Well, because it doesn't want you to fail.
Right.
But it comes across the way we perceive it as, oh, it's just being negative and we can't do anything about it. So if we think about how we perceive other people in this world, how we perceive different situations that come to us, and we try and do what we think is right from a positive standpoint, then what ends up happening, in my experience, is we send this positive energy out to the universe and we attract back positive energy.
Yes, you're a magnet.
And the thing is, it works the other way as well.
Oh, yeah. And it's, if you knew that before, but I think sometimes we, you know, we'll get the sign and then we don't listen, or we do listen. And sometimes you just don't, it's so vague, not to the extreme what you went through. There are things in your life, I'm sure, that were so vague. You're like, wait a minute, somebody told me that 10 years ago. And it's like reading a good book. The book doesn't change, it's how you interpret it changes.
Absolutely.
And it's just that point of view. So how long did it take you to get, was it an instantaneous thing for you for the mindset? Or was it something that was slow going and you realized what wasn't working when you told them, that's it, I quit. I got to focus on, If I'm dead, I can't not do a job. I can't do anything. Uh-huh. And so was it that started it? Did it take a long time? Did you kind of like really fall into it pretty fast and going, hey, I've got to do something this now. I don't have time for this. Or did it take a little while?
Yeah, it took, when I think back about it, it probably took between 6 and 8 weeks. And
that's not long.
That's not long, because what I did was I was focusing on trying to figure out how to reduce my stress. And what I did was I started experimenting with different tools and techniques, and a lot of them worked, some of them didn't. But what happened was, as I saw certain things work, and especially ones that were mindset techniques, I saw, okay, there's something to this, and it only works if I can stay present. I can understand I notice if all of a sudden I feel my stress level coming up, it's like, okay, I know it. Before I always think about the cartoon where they show the character or maybe the thermometer going up ready to explode, right?
Right.
And it's like, don't let it explode.
Right.
Address it before it explodes. And it's interesting because one of the techniques that was a very simple one, but one of the techniques that was effective for me, one was the mindset that I should respect the other person's perception of the world. Now, I don't have to agree with it, but I can respect it because, as we were talking earlier, that is that person's view of the world, okay?
Right.
And, so instead of arguing about it or anything like that, it's like, okay, and tell me more. I always like that. Tell me more and stuff. And I'm not going to agree with it, in many cases, but I'm going to let them, state their case, let's say.
Right, right.
By doing that, I don't get personally vested in a conflict, let's say. So that was a huge one. The other one, which is so important for me, because is too often we want to be liked by everyone.
Yeah.
Right?
Of course.
And I, as a professor, so I started teaching college classes back in 1999.
Okay.
And I remember I would have a class, an in-person class, a perfect example. I'd have 30, 40 students in this class. And at the end of the course, we'd get our course evaluation. And I would get, and I'm not kidding you, I would get, if I had 40 students, I would get 38, 39 students who said this was the best class I've ever had. Because I taught the way I wanted to be taught, not the way I was taught when I was in college.
Right.
Because I had 95% of my professors were horrible. But I taught the way I would like to be taught, with activities and engagement and stuff, from my heart, and just having fun.
Yeah. Yes.
When you have fun learning, you're going to learn more.
Great.
So I had a lot of games in there and everything. But then I would always have one student, I shouldn't say always, but every now and then I'd have one student who would say, oh, I didn't really like this class. And I remember I would sit there and stress over, how did I fail? I got this one student who doesn't like me, but 38, 39 that loved me. And it's like, but that didn't matter, because
right.
I had to focus on that one individual. And so I realized, after this all happened to me with basically the burnout, I realized that I'm not pizza. I'm not going to be liked by everyone.
Oh, now I'm
so
hungry.
So I actually have, Philip, I actually have a note reminding me on the corner of my monitor that says, I am not pizza.
I love it. I love it. Great. I'm going to think about that. I love little tidbits. You take stuff that works for you, because you want to have things that are relatable.
Yes.
If you can't do something simple when the stress time happens, you're not going to be able to go into a yoga position when somebody's coming at you. And it was interesting you mentioned this, because, and I've said this before, is if you do something to me and I react to you, you're now in charge of me.
Right. Right.
And it's very difficult, because nobody taught us how to not do that. So you have to learn that on your own. And if you have the 90% of your life is perfect, what do we focus on?
The 10%. 10%. Absolutely.
So, because no one talks about it. There's no college course. There's books on it. But, you know, if you're going to school or even high school or junior high, you learn how to deal with, you know, stress is just a word. It doesn't fall out of the sky and it comes in. We don't have stressful jobs. We have stressful thoughts.
Right. Absolutely. Right?
So when you were talking about that, you know, somebody in their mind thought it was appropriate in ICU to go, hey, moron, get this done. And if you're not in the right mindset, it's going to go, you know, exactly. And there is no in between. There is no analyzing. So now you have a process, a procedure that works for you, that you can deal with it, and it gets stronger and stronger. Not that these things don't happen, but it's a way to be able to perceive the outside world. You've got to change, not them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The outside world is out of your control. I don't care who it is or what it is. And you've got to do it in yourself. And to be able to stress out over probably 90 to 100% of the stuff that goes on in the world, you can do absolutely zero about.
Yeah.
Now, can you donate your time? Can you donate some money? That's fine. But most of the stuff that goes on the planet, you can't do anything about.
Absolutely.
So I want to go further, and thank you for sharing that, because that makes a huge difference, not just for me. I learned so much about myself from these interviews. I'm Jewish, and my mother used to take Yiddish school.
Hmm.
And she gave me a Yiddish term when I was a kid, said it all the time. She goes, vermach de moil. You got to say it that way. Vermach de moil, it means shut your mouth.
Oh, interesting.
So not that I always did all the time, but I, as you get older, you learn to listen. I mean, really listen, instead of just going, and thinking about what I'm having for dinner. And I've learned so much from people because we're not so different.
Mm-hmm.
We of course, we have a perception difference. Of course. But whatever that process procedure that you have, you just shared it with. And if I could take something out of that, I'm not a pizza. I'm like, I love that. So now every time I eat a pizza, I'm going to laugh. And they're going to go, what's so funny? Never mind. Because it goes back to being a professor. You know that you've made differences in people's lives, and you'll never know 99% of them that you touched. Because they're not going to share it with you. They might say, hey, thank, great class. But that's good to know. Now, I'm going to the next thing, which is, I love this, a certified laughter yoga teacher. Now, I define laughter as God's alcohol because it's free and you should do it every morning. There's a book I was reading by a book, Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich. And he says you should have, he wrote this like in the, what, the, like the
1930s. Yeah.
30s, yeah. During the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you should do a laughing exercise every morning, but do it privately by yourself, because it starts your day in a positive manner.
Uh-huh.
So I love this idea. What in God's name, how do you get a certification in laughter yoga? But I love it. Tell me about it. I want to hear it.
So I actually found out about laughter yoga back when I was still living in the San Francisco Bay Area. And I just happened to see, I don't remember if it was a Facebook post or something. And I'm going, what is that? You know, people have always commented that I'm the comedian. You know, we all play different roles in our families and stuff. And, you know, and I became the comedian. And so I thought, oh, okay, I guess, is this something where we go and we watch a funny movie or cartoons or, you know, cat videos or something and laugh?
Right.
And
right.
So that's what I thought it was going to be. Well, what it turned out to be, and the secret sauce behind, you know, as you said, the God's alcohol, the real secret behind laughter yoga, which officially started in the mid-90s in India, and there's been hundreds of clinical trials proving the benefits of laughter yoga. And there's probably thousands of laughter clubs all over the world since. So in the last 25 you know, years or so. But what the secret sauce behind it, you know, we always feel good. Everybody can agree, you know, if you have a hearty laughter, you feel good about it. You have the hearty laughter. And if you do one for, let's say, 10 to 20 seconds, what it tells our bodies to do is to drop the positive endorphins into our body that ends up giving us the huge benefits over time, such as, you know, things that can help reduce, you know, chronic disease, you know, cancer, diabetes, you know, heart disease, etc. Well, here's the crazy thing that most people don't know. Our bodies, as smart as they are, do not know a real laugh from a forced laugh. It only knows that you're laughing. So in laughter yoga, what we do is we do activities to get people laughing. And it may not be anything funny, but you're laughing anyway. And
I'm laughing
when you
now.
Have a, right. And when you have a group of people together laughing, what happens? Laughing is contagious.
Yes.
And so it just works. And
wow.
The incredible thing is, one of the studies that is so amazing about this is Dr. William Fry out of Stanford. He found that if you do 20 minutes of laughter yoga, it's equal to an hour of rigorous exercise in the gym.
Because, well, you're laughing, it's your oxygen, your heart rate, your blood pressure, all the good stuff.
Exactly. And I'm not talking about where you have to laugh for 20 minutes completely without a break. But it's talking about, okay, you know, you have a hearty laugh, and then what you are automatically doing is your deep breathing, which is really the yoga part. Because laughter yoga is not where you're on a mat and you're doing downward dog or warrior pose. I mean, you can if you want. It's totally, you're totally free, but it's not required. You can have a very rigorous laughter yoga session, and you sit in your chair the whole time.
Well, this is good for older people,
absolutely.
Retirement communities, and this is great. See, I learned something else now. I'm going to look this up after. Do you still do this?
Oh, absolutely. So yeah, you find out through, if you go to laughteryoga.org, that has all the information on it.
Just a minute. I'm marking this down. Everybody's listening. Do it. Do the same. I mean, the whole thing about, and I told you before we started recording, it's about positivity. It's about how your mind works. It's about the conscious, the subconscious, about what goes on the outside and how you need to change on the inside. And I love the positivity. I've never heard of laughter yoga. So I'm definitely going to look that up now.
Oh, there's got to be clubs in Illinois. I'm sure if there isn't.
And the thing is, and I want your point of view from this. Anything that has to do with philosophy, how you view things. For me, it's my imaging technique and all this other stuff I do. It's simple to talk about, but it's not easy to do. And the reason why I say it's not easy is because it takes work. Because the outside world doesn't want you to be happy.
Right.
And
that's because they're
saying,
jealous. They're jealous of you. That's
yes,
the problem.
And, and they're like, you know, that's very well, the word's correct. They're jealous. They're envious. They don't understand. They want your happiness, but they don't know how to do it, how to ask you, what are you doing to have that smile on your face? And you went through all this stuff and you came out of it better than you were when you were on death's door. How did you do that? And it's like dieting or any of this other stuff. We will feel a little better, get a little worse, feel a little better, get a little worse. And we do this alternating type current in our minds as opposed to direct current, which is nice and smooth thought, but it takes. One of the things that I found is I believe the most important part of everyone's day, more than anything, is your sleep.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Because your sleep is one of the indicators that you are physically stressed and that means whether, you know, a lot of people think, oh, okay, I'm not getting enough sleep. Well, if you're oversleeping as well, that is an indicator that you're physically stressed as well, because, you know, when we're, our bodies like consistency, you know, it's a machine, and yeah, there's things that are going to happen, but it likes consistency. And so each of us has a certain number of hours that are optimal for us to sleep. And if we don't get enough sleep, we're going to feel tired in the morning. If we get more than that sleep, we're likely to feel tired in the morning as well, or whenever we get up. So it's, you know, the what I always mention to people is the early signs, having an uneven sleep cycle, having, you know, stiffness in your shoulders and in your back. Because for those of us who sit at a desk, let's say, for our work, when we're stressed, what do? We tend to hunch over.
Yeah.
And we don't even realize that we're hunching over. So guess what? That puts a whole bunch of pressure on our shoulders and our back. digestive issues.
Oh.
Where, you know, no amount of Pepto-Bismol is going to take care of it.
No.
And then another one, which was a common one for me as well, was reaching for the Excedrin bottle every day or every other day instead of occasionally, because I was waking up and I had headaches constantly.
Man.
So these are all the things that are very common early signs. Another one, you know, it became less when we had COVID, but prior to COVID, and now it's starting to catch back up again, is common colds. When instead of having like one cold a winter, we end up getting one cold every month. And it's like, because you're stressed and you're, you know, you basically, when you're stressed out, you're putting all your body's mechanisms to protect yourself under stress as well. And so it's just, it puts, you know, puts you in an uncompromising position. And so you have to realize that. And, you know, one thing I wanted to point out for the audience as well is, you know, I mentioned about, you know, not all stress is bad. What we really want to focus on, going back to your comment, Philip, about the mindset, there's two, in my experience and research, there's two types of stress that I would label as negative stress. Or, you know, some people go distress, they call it distress. Mm,
it's true.
One is ruminating about something in the past. So you're letting something in the past churn. A common one is guilt. You're either guilty about either something you did or didn't do, right?
Right.
And you beat yourself up. Well, the problem is it's in the past. We cannot change it. The only thing we
unless
can
you're
do,
in Star Trek.
Well, yes, of course. Or if you have time travel, right?
Right.
You
know, well, doesn't everybody?
Exactly.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So, but as if instead of lead churning about something that you feel guilty about,
right?
Learn the positive aspects of whatever happened back then. And if you need to, you know, let's say it's somebody who's maybe passed on, write them a letter that they never see. But at least you get that out, whatever those emotions are. But, you know, let it go. It just take the learnings, the positive learnings from the past, and not let it keep churning inside of you. And, you know, a common one, I experienced a divorce 10 years ago. And, you know, that was constantly on my mind for a year, year and a half. It was constantly on my mind. And I couldn't, you know, it was just churning negatively inside of me. And it just did nothing but bad for me. So try and take care of whatever it is that's in the past. Get rid of that guilt. Let it go. Learn from the past and don't apply it to the future. Or don't apply the negative to the future. Apply the positive learnings to the future. And then the other one, the other flavor is anxiety about something that may or may not happen in the future. And how many times do you think, okay, I've got, you know, let's say a lot of people have a fear of giving a presentation and they think, oh God, this presentation's going to be terrible. I'm going to go horrible at it. Or I've got to have this really important conversation with somebody, whether it's a boss, an employee, a family member, whoever. Oh, it's going to go terrible, blah, blah, blah. Well, what happens is when we think about the negative,
it's going to be bad.
It's going to be bad because we're going to manifest that. It's like, because what are we going to, something we talked about earlier, we are projecting negativity out there. So what are we attracting back?
Negativity.
Instead, a great technique using your mindset is, let's say, let's think about you have to have a difficult conversation with somebody or, you know, a presentation. Think about right at the end of that conversation with somebody and they give you a hug instead of a negative outcome. They give you a hug. Or you're giving a presentation. As soon as you're done with that presentation, they give you a standing ovation. Now, all of a sudden, you start feeling the stress go down because you're not letting that churn. So if we can just learn to stop ruminating in the past and stop having anxiety about something that may or may not happen in the future, all the other stress is going to be a piece of cake. It really will.
Imagining that, but see, we're told at a very early age to stop using your imagination. You're four or five years old, but And one of the things that I don't want to forget this, I made a note, unforgiveness is much worse than forgiveness. And I had somebody pass away, a family member, and we were not in forgiveness for each other. And I had to unforgive myself and for that person. And I was divorced about 22 years ago. And many years, I didn't let things go. And what happens, and it could be a fight with a friend, it could be a fight with a parent, it could be anybody. It's not just what we're talking about. And what it does is it holds you back, and you don't even know it's holding you back, because that anger, that frustration, or shoulda, coulda, you know, there's one person I was reading about, stop shooting on yourself. You can't go back and do that. So the future and the past are basically the same thing. We're worrying about things that could possibly happen, worry about things we can't change. And, you know, of course, you and I have never made any mistakes, but for the rest of the world, you know, you have to, but to me, and I agree with you, you have to, what am I supposed to learn from this? What am I supposed to get? How can I become better at this and understanding not, or as I said, vermach the moil, how do you become a better listener, but a real listener, not just somebody going, and shaking your head, because a lot of people do that, but actually thinking to yourself, maybe I could get something out of this. One of the things I've learned for myself as of late is there's a lot of minutia and activities that we do in life, cleaning the house, cleaning the toilet, going shopping. You can go on and on forever. And what I do now is I have some shamanic music. I do a lot of meditation and prayers, or I listen to some positive, you know, audio books or whatever. And I also do quiet because I can't listen to everything. Excuse me, when I'm mowing the lawn or vacuuming. But I take the time to think about what's going on in my mind. I take the time to see what I'm thinking about. Am I using thoughts that are just a bunch of noise, or am I using thinking thoughts? What am I doing right now? And I've gotten so much out of it. And by the time I'm done with it, my useless task is done. I got a little exercise. I clean something. And instead of what, like I said, grocery shopping, making the bed, I don't care what it is, but taking advantage of every minute second, or as I call it, the sand time that we have in life, and get the joy and abundance out of it. And it does take work, because you have to change the way your mindset is. And it's not just changing a habit, it's changing the way you're thinking. And the more you do it, the easier it becomes. And I love that example. It's so true. Oh my God, I'm going to go out and I'm going to play live, and I'm going to screw up the song. And even though I wrote it and blah, blah, blah. And guess what? You're going to screw it up. It's going to come really crappy. And if you imagine that, because a lot of things in life we think is going to be bad, you said the wrong word, you played the wrong note. 99.9%, as my mom used to say, no one even knows it.
Absolutely.
So it's just living that way. Now I've got to go to the greatest, not the best, but the greatest interior landscaping company in the San Francisco Bay Area. Is it called Office Plants by Everything Grows?
And it is.
How long have you had that company? And the president, does that mean you're the owner?
I'm the owner, yes.
Okay, how long have you had it?
2005, I bought it.
Oh, yes, oh, you bought it.
Okay. I bought it. It was a struggling company that was having difficulty. I bought it and turned it around. It took a couple of years, but turned it around and made it back onto a growth cycle up until we hit March of 2020.
Well, yeah.
Because it's interior landscaping, and you know, it had been bulletproof, you know, because the way that it's, you know, I manage it with a business partner, and the way we managed it, it was bulletproof from the economy, because, you know, you would think that interior landscaping, so plants in buildings,
right,
that's a luxury. Well, we focused on it that we had basically our customer base were ones that wouldn't necessarily unload the plants at the first sign of a recession.
Okay.
So it worked very well.
All right.
But when COVID hit in full force in March of 2020, when you don't have people coming into the office, you don't need plants. And that was a problem. And we talk about dealing with stress. And fortunately, I was able to, given the fact that what I had learned and stuff and applied on myself, I was able to help the company with this as well. when you lose 60% of your revenue in 30 days, so literally all of our growth,
like a light switch.
Yes, like a light switch. All of our growth from 2013 to 2019 was gone in 30 days. And so it was like, wow, we were thinking, is the company even going to survive this, et cetera? Now it's, you know, we're luckily we should be back to our 2019 numbers at the by the end of this month for 2022. But it took 3 years to recover from that. Now, though, on a positive side, we really feel, you know, strong about the future because a recession,
right, that's
is
nothing.
Child's play compared to COVID.
Right, exactly. Well, so it's interesting you mentioned that because if you didn't have the tools you've created for yourself, you'd be back in a hospital.
Absolutely. Be just stressing left and right. And yeah, I mean, you know, it was when you have a bunch of employees that are depending on you and customers that are playing, you know, so it's just, you have to be able to manage it.
Well, Professor Pete, I'm going to thank you again very much for this. I'm going to have to interview again because there's always something good to talk about in this. Because I wanted to go into meditation and some prayer and seeing what you do, if you do any of that, but I don't want to cut it short. So we're going to have to talk about this at another date. Again, Professor Pete, thank you very much for being on the show. I really much really appreciate it.
Well, Philip, thank you so much for having me on the show, and I really appreciate your listeners' time as well.
Thank you very much. And to my conscious community, remember, it is more important to express your thinking thoughts and not the thoughts you are thinking. That is what is called conscious communication. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to Conscious Communication. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and recommend on Apple Podcasts, Overcast, or wherever you get your podcast. You can also get more great information at ConsciousCommunicationPodcast.com.